You are listening to the Wool Academy podcast. This is episode number one. Hello and welcome. My name is Elizabeth Van Delden, and once a week we talk to an industry expert from the wool industry supply chain, from farm to fashion and beyond, delivering strategies and insights to be successful in wool and showcasing those beautiful stories wool has to tell. Today's episode is supported by The Wool Room. The Wool Room is dedicated to delivering you a better night's sleep. At thewoolroom.com, you can choose from a wide range of mattresses, mattress protectors, bedding and beds filled with British wool, ensuring that you stay cool and comfortable at night. Find out how wool can improve your sleep by visiting thewoolroom.com and claim your 10% discount with the promo code WOOLACADEMY. Without further ado, let's get started with today's guest. Today on the show, we have Ulrike Bayer, who many people in the wool industry also know by the name of Ricky. And she is the founder of the brand Icky, which sounds very similar to her nickname, Ricky. And I'm sure she'll tell us all about that in a minute. And Icky offers a beautiful infant apparel and bedding out of wool. Welcome, Ricky.
Hello, thank you.
Well, it's great to have you at Wool Academy, and this is actually our first episode of Wool Academy, and I'm so happy to have you as our first guest, because I think the business that you've started only 2 years ago is very inspirational, and I believe that our listeners can learn a lot from your experience. So thank you again for taking the time to be on our show. And while we are recording this, you are actually in Shanghai, where you founded your company, Icky. And just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, and how did you get to where you are today?
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me and for asking me to talk about wool and my little company. Yeah, I mean, I've been in Shanghai for 8 years now, and I came here from Italy, where I was for 7 years working in the textile industry. And initially, I came to work in a startup, Indochino, making custom-made suits that we sold online. And I was the fifth employee there, so I had my first experience with a startup. And I learned a lot from that, and in those 4 years, also saw where there's a niche and what was missing in China, and specifically for Chinese moms. And so even though I always knew I would do something on my own, I never knew it would necessarily be in kids' apparel. But then seeing the situation here and the problems that mothers were having, expats and local moms, I thought, there's a demand for great product for infants that is certified and qualified, quality-wise, all safe. So I put two and two together and said that that was something that I could develop. And so I set out for a year doing product development with a mill near Shanghai, and launched the website just in October last year. So yeah, end of last year.
Wow.
So it's been, it will nearly be one year, yeah, that we've had the shop online.
Okay, great. And how is the Chinese target group perceiving your products? Like, what is their reaction?
Well, I mean, the Chinese market is super sophisticated. I would say that the most sophisticated consumers today are in China. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just looking at the 8 years that I've been here, I think when I came, branding was everything, and everyone wanted to define themselves because of the economic growth through the products that they had and the brands that were on these products. But I would say that now this has changed a lot, and the consumers are interested in the story behind the product. So it's not enough to just have a brand. They are very conscious about why they are making certain choices. And so that was very positive for my brand, because there is a huge story behind me, my family, and in wool, but also wool in itself is a great story. So it takes a lot of education, because the Chinese mothers believe in cotton primarily. But with this education, we see that the consumers understand, and then they don't buy once, they come back again and again. So it's like a change in philosophy, you know, to dress your child in wool comes with education. So we also educate through education forums that we have.
Yeah, I saw that on your website that you had already two education forums. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm fully aware that people have a very misconceived idea of what wool is. You know, a lot of people think it's scratchy. They can't understand that when I say that it's actually also a summer fiber. So that takes a lot of education. And what we actually did, we went with a GoPro onto Nanjing Xilu, which is the main road here in Shanghai, and we went with the fabric that I had developed, because I developed the product from the raw material.
Mm-hmm.
And we took the fabric and we just interviewed random people on the street and asked them what this fabric was. And the first question was, you know, what does this feel like? And they all said, soft, very light. And then we would say to them, what do you think this fabric is? And they would say cotton, or some would say cashmere. And then we would tell them that it was wool. And all of them were extremely shocked by that, you know, the fact that we revealed to them that it was wool, because all of them said that, you know, for them, wool was scratchy and thick and something for winter. Mm-hmm. So that was very eye-opening, and a lot of people viewed that little clip that you can see on our website. And so we realized that, you know, when the people see the product and they feel the product, then the idea behind the product becomes very clear to them, and it's something that they can really win into. So the Education Forum is a platform where we invite mothers and dads, any caretaker of little ones, to come and get information about, firstly, wool and icky. And I also sell my product at those events, and I don't hide that. I'm a for-profit. So we educate about the product, sell the product at the event, but we also use the event to create a platform for other wonderful brands and organizations that want to teach about infant-related issues. So what I want to do with the platform is to create something that will become like TED Talks one day, where we invite doctors and other people from the medical field. The last education forum, we had an osteopath who came and spoke about rehabilitation. So, you know, it's all about partnering up with people that have the same consumers and the same interest and the same passion for getting a message out there. So, yeah, I open it up to anyone who, you know, obviously I want to be interested in what they have to say as well. But, you know, I think we can learn from each other and create a great community. Yeah, so the third one will be coming up in Chongqing, which is another province in China, where I have a small group of people who are really raring and ready to go to set up the education forums in that province. So it's very exciting.
Wow, that sounds really interesting. Great. And I guess these forums are also a great way to really talk to your either potential customers or then customers and get direct feedback. And what is it like that you learned from your customers? And have you identified certain barriers when it comes to wool and especially with baby wear?
Well, what I've learned is that people buy what you believe in. And my friends have been telling me again and again, I mean, I have a reputation here in Shanghai for being the wool lady. I don't know if that's good or not or bad, but people have randomly come up to me and said, aren't you the girl who likes wool or does something with wool? So, you know, I obviously do talk about it a lot. And my friends have kept saying to me, you know, over the years, you are the brand, you know, you are the person that needs to talk to the consumer. And while at the beginning I really didn't want to do that, I wanted the brand to speak for itself, I have now learned over the last year that people really want to hear the story and why something is so amazing to you. And when it is so amazing to you, it very quickly becomes amazing to them. And so people are just so interested in the story about wool. I don't know what to say. I'm surprised that people within the industry are less interested in up-and-coming startups working with wool. You know, I feel like there's so many people out there that still want to hear the story and are ready to learn something new. So to answer your question, I think that, people buy what you believe in, and I really believe in wool, and I don't just say it, I really wear it a lot in the summer and in winter. And also they want to see that you're passionate, you know, and that you believe in something. And so through these education forums, this community grows, and it's a ripple effect, you know. People mm-hmm. pass on what they've heard, and they remember the story, and then they are connected to the product. So it's a great way to interact.
Yeah. What I also liked when looking at your website is that you there's one page where you really explain the process from the sheep to the finished product. So I think that's also very important in educating the consumer.
Yeah, absolutely. Although one has to always be careful that we tend in the wool industry to be a bit incestuous and only talk to each other. And so that's why it's really really important to me that my brand is a brand that stands for other things as well. You know, my brand is about having integrity, working with mills that have international standards, showing the world that China can actually create product that is of the highest of qualities, and that there are people here trying to make a difference. You know, and I think that way you open your audience. What I find in the wool industry is that we all stay connected to each other, and there are actually so many more interested people outside, and it just takes a little bit of time to get that interest awakened. But once you do, they're just so ready for the information. And to bring that information across, you have to be simple. You know, we like the website, we use things like, the design, it's very minimalist. It's, you know, creating something that people who are not in wool can in some way relate to. So I think that's really important. And then, of course, after that, all the benefits come as well.
Yeah.
And then they are converted, so to speak.
Yes, and I see that you're also quite active in social media. Can you tell us a little bit about your strategy? How do you use social media to promote your brand?
Yeah, I mean, social media, I feel, has really changed over the last 2 years. And I feel like, again, it's always about a story. It's not enough to just be on social media for the sake of social media. You really have to have some content and something interesting that people can engage with. So saying that, social media is a full-time job, I would say, and so I am now handing it over to a team to do, because it does take a lot of time. But, I'm on all the social media platforms in China and abroad. And what ultimately I want is that I become a go-to place for getting good products. So rather than saying wool, I want people to think baby product and automatically think that the basics for babies should be wool, because it just is the best option, not because Icky says it, but because science actually proves that, you know. So I think it's, I want to be a platform that people can go to and trust and get good information from the industry, get good, connections, and ultimately, just tell my story, because my story is really, I grew up with wool. I used to go to the wool plant every Saturday with my dad, and, you know, we couldn't wait for him to throw us into the scoured wool, and, you know, the smell of wool is something that we just all know so well. So, you know, this is not just a brand that I've invented from nothing. It's really everything I can remember. And we actually even had a sheep at home as a pet for 2 days, and then it made too much noise, and I think we had to get rid of it. So I think, to get back to what you're asking about social media, I think social media is really important because you have a lot of reach, but engaging, because so many people are on social media now, it's really competitive, and you have to have an authentic story and something that people can trust and come back to over time. You know, at the beginning, when you're interesting and you've got nice branding, maybe people come to you for that. But if you don't have content that's keeping you interesting over the long haul, then it's a little bit risky, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to do, to be a place that people need to go because they've found from experience that, you know, we have good product, good service, good information. I mean, we're still at the beginning, so much more to do. I mean, I'm far from anywhere where I want to be yet, but yeah.
And where do you see as your challenge, like your number one challenge that you have in your business today?
Finding the right people, I would say.
To work for your brand?
That's what's fun. Yeah, so yeah, that's a challenge that a lot of people have in China at the moment because jobs are still available. So people, the turnover in companies is quite... frequent, and you know, when you're building a brand, you need people that are really, really believe in the product and want to be emotionally invested in it. And also, you know, to have an experience that is unique for them. And at the same time, for me, the employer, it's important to realize that this is my passion and my company, and I can't expect my employees to have that passion to the same extent. But what I can give them is, you know, a great work environment for a company that has integrity, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, finding those type of people is a bit of a challenge at the moment as I'm trying to build the team. So yeah, I would say that's the biggest challenge.
Yeah. And how many people work with you at the moment?
So now we just have two people for doing all the social media and content, and then graphic designer, accountants, and then the factory. It's all pretty much outsourced and freelancers that I'm using. So, and the next step is to go to bring the people in-house. So they work a lot of days a week for me, but they're not fully employed by me. So this is the next step.
Yeah,
you know?
I think that's always the challenge for startups to grow while you're still trying to grow your profit, etc.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah,
tell me,
exactly.
How you mentioned in the beginning that you developed the fabric, and I read you are actually a textile engineer, and so you
yes.
developed the fabric with together with a spinner and weaver, knitter. Tell me a little bit about that relationship and how that you developed that.
Well, because I've been in China for so long already, I'm quite integrated in the wool industry, and I think that's one of the big most important factors of choosing the right partners. And I have to say, even with my previous startup, I was very lucky that I don't know, I sort of connected with the right people and was very sensitive to who I could and could not work with. And so I've had a very good experience in terms of suppliers in China, which is not what a lot of people say. So I just want to contradict that, you know, thing that people tend to say about their working relationships with factories in China. I mean, of course, they can be negative, but if you choose well, they can also be very positive. The mills in China, like anyone in the wool industry will tell you, are at the a lot of them are have the best machinery in the world. They're buying their wool. 80% of the Australian merino comes into China to be processed. So, you know, this is where a lot of the wool is being processed. Saying that, however, quality is not having the right material, having the right machinery. What I've seen from experience is that quality is really having the whole supply chain put together in a way that works well. And I think that's where I come in as a textile engineer, is that my experience is very technical. So it really was working with the factories together, looking at the sample, looking at the raw material certification, working with the yarn factory and checking the yarn before it goes into processing, and then really looking at the finishing of the fabric, because there's not a lot of experience in finishing products well. So you can have the best raw material and the best machines to process the fabric, but if you don't have a good finishing, or, you know, then then you're not bringing the best out of your raw material. So it took 1 year to get that right, you know. So I rejected a lot of samples, and I would go to the factories all the time and tell them to knit more loosely, put more tension on the yarn, decrease, you know, look at the water temperature and all those things. That's where the know-how is. So it's not just the raw material, it's not just the yarn, it's not just the fabric, and it's not just the finishing. It really is bringing all of that together. Mm-hmm. And and that's why at the end I finally got a product that I was very happy with, and that the mill, I think, themselves were very surprised with. So yeah, I have to say I keep going back to my product when I have challenging moments, and that's one thing that I'm always happy with, is the quality of the fabric that we make.
Oh, that's a really nice
which story. which is really important.
and that's the heart of your product. And when you started and setting up your business, what was the biggest challenge for you at the time?
I think that setting up a business in China has a lot of challenges itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of bureaucracy and knowing who to speak with and who to work with. So I think doing a lot of research before was very important, and just working with people that you felt, well, that I felt I had a gut feeling with were the right people to go with. I think that's always really important because, you know, the facts you can learn, but it's very difficult to learn character. And if you have a bad character, work with someone with a bad character, a lot of things can go wrong. So I think, I would go saying that those were the biggest challenges, choosing the right people to work with, be it setting up the company, working the factories I chose to work with. All those things were hard, but in the end, I think it all worked out. Well, and also, you know, I had by the time I set up my company, I'd already been here for 4 years, and I already knew the suppliers, and they to this day are doing me a lot of favors with payment terms and all those type of things, because, you know, people believe in the person. They don't, you know, if you do what you say and you have a good track record, I think, of work relationships, then even in China, these mills are willing to go the extra mile, you know, if they believe in you. And I really needed that. So I'm very happy to say that I found partners that until now I'm quite satisfied with.
And is there something that you've learned over the last 2 years that you kind of wished you had known in the beginning? And is that something you can tell other entrepreneurs who are looking to go into wool? What can they learn from your experience?
Oh, I've learned so much. I've learned how much I don't know. That, I would say, is the first thing. You know, you really realize how much you don't know and how much you need other people. And that's a great thing to learn, because isn't it great to need other people? And then I would say that once you've made the choice to do something and you believe in it, I mean, now is the first year is quite easy, because if you're making a product, especially manufacturing a product, then you're with the product and you have something tangible and you're seeing results. So I found the first year was after I had gone through all the challenges of setting up the company, it was quite easy. The second year, which is this year, is more of a challenge, because then you start looking at sales and your distribution channels and, you know, for us, the education programs. So it's maintaining that and having perseverance to really get what you believe in with all your heart across to everyone else. So I think, yeah, the two things would be realizing how little you know and how it's totally okay to need other people, because you can't do it by yourself. And secondly, yeah, perseverance all the way. I mean, it takes a lot of perseverance.
And I wanted to go back to also how you market your product. You just mentioned this year was all about sales. And I noticed that you are getting mentioned quite a lot in magazines such as Vogue and Glamour. How do these PR opportunities appear for you?
That, I have to say, was totally out of my control. Vogue found me on Twitter when I only had 120 followers and contacted me via my website because they loved what I was doing and the product that I had. So I have to say, I didn't do anything for that. And as a result of being featured in Vogue, the other group, the other magazines, which are also part of the Condé Nast group, then approached me, so Glamour and Tatler magazine. So that was a real blessing and something that I did not, I mean, that was beyond my own personal, anything I could have done. So, yeah, that was good, that was very good for us. And then, yeah, I mean, I think I have a lot to do still in getting out there. So now I'm really, my next step here is to invest in a sales team and then also to decide how we are going to distribute because every market is different. But, you know, different markets, I've had different people reach out to me because they've seen the product and say to me, you know, we see a market for your product in this country. Would you like to collaborate? So that's actually where I'm at the moment, just trying to look at every market and see which the best way is to move forward without compromising on the brand and letting go of the integrity behind it. So, yeah, that's one of the challenges I'm also facing currently, taking it to that next step of marketing through different sales avenues, you know?
Yes. Yeah, that because obviously at the moment your website and you originally planned to market to the Chinese consumer, but obviously in the era of online shops, everyone in around the world can access and find you and buy purchase. So that was a question I also had, like how's the demand or interest from people who are outside of China?
Yeah, strangely, actually, I haven't, other than social media, we ship all over the world except to Russia. But yeah, that interest has sort of just organically come because those markets, especially the UK, are really sensitive to wool and merino and maybe already see that, you know, quality, it is a product of quality just because of the raw material. But yeah, I mean, it's, in a way, I feel like the foreign markets are more sophisticated and don't need the education. Whereas here, you have a very sophisticated consumer in general, but they still have a preconcept of wool for babies. So there's still that little barrier to overcome. So, yeah, in a way, the foreign markets have been more ready to accept merino wool, in a way, because I think they've seen it more readily, whereas in China, the grandmothers did used to have connection to wool, I've seen, speaking to some, but the younger people just don't really connect it to babies, you know?
Mm. Yeah, and another question that I had is, on your website, you also mentioned that you will donate money for every product purchased. Tell me a little bit about that and what was your idea behind it?
Yeah, so I mean, I quit my job because I felt like I wasn't making an impact in the world. So as naive as that sounds, I really believe that, you know, we have such a short time here and we should be making a difference in other people's lives. So yeah, that's why giving is at the core of my company. And ultimately, I would like to become a one-for-one like Tom's. I don't know if you know Tom.
Yes, yes.
And I actually had the opportunity to meet Blake McCosby. He was in Shanghai, and I spoke to him, and I was able to give him some Icky products for his son, Summit. But, yeah, so that's also why our pricing strategy, our product is slightly higher in price because we really want to, for every product that's bought, we want to contribute to local orphanages. Here in China, just because I am here in China, but ultimately it doesn't need to only be here. And that's just something that I fundamentally believe. And as Blake McCosky said, who's a great inspiration to me, is that, you know, giving needs to be at the core of what what you do. At the moment, we only make small contributions as a percentage of the sales figures because our sales, our financial plan is not strong enough yet. But ultimately, that is the goal, that it will be one for one. So for every product that's bought, we will donate another product. So, yeah, that's something that I'm working towards.
And you mentioned price points, and I think it's always a discussion within the wool industry on what is the, you know, consumers often say, oh, wool is so expensive, but on the other hand, we want wool prices to be high. Especially also for the farmers. So what is your take on at what price should wool products be marketed?
I mean, I think that the whole price issue only ever came up with wool because bad products got onto the market. So, you know, the generation, my generation, didn't really buy wool. And it was really me convincing my friends that wool is a product that you can wear and that can be soft. And so this whole question of price really came up because they didn't see the value in it. And unfortunately, it's still happening today. And I still have some competitors on the market that are producing wool products, but the hand feel is really bad. And so, you know, if you're a mother or a consumer even, just buying a wool product and it's not, doesn't feel soft and luxurious, then of course you're going to question the price. So, I mean, suiting, men's suiting is a different thing, but in, for all of us, other people who are not buying men's suits, I find that this is the case. So, you know, there are some big brands in America that would sell merino products with really bad hand feel, you know, and at really low prices. And so then the value in the product isn't there. And, you know, you have to forget that you can have all the consumers in the world. You know, you have to choose who you want to target. And the person that's buying Icky needs to understand what's behind that product, that there is a know-how behind creating a soft handle, and that wool does come from sheep that have been grown and fed and looked after in a certain way to grow that beautiful fine hair, you know, and that there's a processing skill and combing the fibers parallel. You know, that's all a skill. And the consumer, if he understands that, then he's willing to pay the price. But at the moment, the final consumer just doesn't understand what's so great about wool. I mean, I know the campaign for wool, they're doing a lot now in the UK, but I'm in China, and with the general, and Woolmark is also here, and I'm in contact with them, of course, but, you know, the general people that I speak to, they just don't know what's so great about wool. And when I tell them the story and show them a product with beautiful soft handle, they just can't believe it. And so I think it's that whole price issue only becomes an issue because the product itself is an issue. You know, you see in China that people are willing to pay anything for a product that is good, you know. So I think that's a lot of what's behind questioning price. For me, my price strategy is high because of that fact that there is a skill behind producing the my know-how, which is behind creating that fabric, and then also, you know, working on the finishing, and then also the contribution that we want to make back to the community. And also, it's not a throwaway fashion. You know, that's another thing that's really important for my brand that I'm really concerned is creating a supply chain that's ethical. And that is possible in China because people have this preconcept that China is cheap and that people are just going to China because, you know, they have some cost advantage. But today, China is not cheap anymore. It costs not exactly the same, but a very similar price to create the same product here than it does in Europe. And so, you know, it's really about understanding where you want to make a difference. I'm already in China, and that's why I created this brand in China, and I see a demand from mothers in China, and so that's why it made sense for me logistically to be here. But I choose my mills very carefully, and we do all the testing, and, you know, they have to pass local and international regulations. And the local regulations are actually stricter than the foreign ones, except that the enforcement is very low. So that's another thing that the consumer doesn't know and that we need to educate about.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for sharing that. That was very insightful. And I think, yeah, it's really important that more entrepreneurs like yourself start working with wool. And what do you think the wool industry should do to help startups like your own so that we have more of icky brands in the future? What can the wool industry do to support these kind of entrepreneurs?
Well, I mean, I've had no one from the wool industry per se reach out to me. I mean, it's just very sad because, you know, it takes a lot of effort and work to build a company, and there are so many investors out there who do want to invest. I was invited to the Rise conference in Hong Kong to a tech startup, and everyone was so fascinated by wool, you know, and I just thought, isn't it so sad that the investors are not actually coming from the wool industry themselves itself? So in a way, it's good because you're getting into a new field and meeting new people, so I find that very exciting. But, I just think that generally the wool industry has in the past been quite concentrated on the wool industry, and I think it's exciting to branch out and to, you know, get other people involved. So, yeah, I think that the wool industry has for a long time been very traditional. I know that there have been a lot of changes in the UK, you know, with the initiatives that have been going on, and those are great. But if I speak for myself, yeah, I don't feel like the wool industry sees the potential in a young entrepreneur willing to do everything with a big passion like people from, say, the tech industry and other industries do. Because those investors are everywhere in Shanghai and in Hong Kong, you know, just looking for people with ideas and willing to do the work. So yeah, it's a bit of a shame, but I mean, that's just the way it is, I think.
Yeah, I hope that in the long term we can have more brands like yourself joining the wool industry, yes, and communicating about wool. But now, you, before we close, you need to reveal the connection between Ricky and Icky.
Oh, yes. Actually, I was called Icky as a child. So it is directly from my name, actually, because my nickname is later became Ricky, but when I was very young, it was Icky. So my mother tells me, or used to say that in some format. And the slogan, small but brave, refers to the children who come into this world, these babies that seem so vulnerable, and yet they've overcome life, you know, even though they can do nothing when they are born. So that's the braveness that they have. And in a way, it also refers to myself, you know. I feel very small in this world, as we all do, so we have to be brave to do something and achieve something. So yeah, that's what's behind the brand. And the four dots on the top stand for the attributes of the fiber that are, you know, safe, super fiber. I refer to wool as a super fiber. Mm-hmm. Sustainable, although the word sustainable needs to be very carefully used, because sustainable means doing the same practice over and over again without having any impact, negative impact on the environment. And the wool industry does still have some carbon footprints and some impact. So, I mean, there's a lot of room for improvement on that one. And then the last attribute is soft, you know, because soft was so important for me that people realize that wool can be so soft. It's just the first thing that people say is it's not soft when they think of wool. So yeah, those are the four dots on top of Icky, what they refer to. The four S's. The okay. Four S's.
Okay. Wonderful. So where can people find out more about your brand and connect with you?
So yeah, the website is www.icky/online.com. And then we have a Facebook page and Twitter page, and we're on Instagram. And also a website. You can send an email via the website under information. And if you're in China, then it's WeChat. We have WeChat, and also on Weibo. yeah, all the social, Pinterest, we're also on Pinterest.
Okay.
So on all the platforms. But it's better to search Icky with the slogan, small but brave.
Great. Yeah. Okay. We'll also link to all of those different social media names and your website in the show notes so that it's easier for people to find you. Well, thank you so much, Ricky, for the time. I appreciate it. You can almost go into your evening, and I hope you have a great rest of the day. And I wish you much success for your small but brave brand. I appreciate
thank
all that
you
do.
So much.
thank you so much,
Elizabeth, and thank you for what you're doing for the wool industry. It's great.
Well, yeah, we all do our small but brave things, don't we?
Yes. That's great. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you access all the additional information about today's show by going to our website. Visit elizabethvandelden.com/001. That is elizabethvandelden.com/001. If you liked today's show, may we recommend that you subscribe to our podcast so that you don't miss any of our next episodes, and also do us a favor and tell your colleagues and friends about us. That would mean the world to us, and thank you, and see you next week. Bye-bye.